Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is a blackjack player who calls himself Rymo. We'll be talking to Rymo in a few minutes. A friend and I had more than an hour to kill waiting for a drawing, and I suggested he bring along his 10-year-old daughter and 12-year-old son, and I'd give them some backgammon lessons. It's been decades since I played competitively, but I'm still considerably further advanced than either of them. We certainly didn't gamble, and children don't even know what the Dublin Cube is. But let's say that after we do this several more times, they want to compete and keep score. For the near future, I'd kick their butts, plain and simple. If they stay with the game, over time, it'll become more competitive. But a simple handicap system is possible, I believe, and that would allow us to compete. For example, I'm going to use units of 5 to bet with. These can be multiplied by whatever makes sense for you. If I received 5 units when I beat one kid, but lost 15 when I lost, multiplied by the cube and whether it was a single, double, or triple game, it might turn into a competitive match. Maybe losing 15 isn't the right number. Maybe it's 20, or soon 10 would be, because they're going to get better pretty fast, and I pretty much plateaued. Give me a big enough handicap, and I could challenge the world champion. This handicap will affect some decisions. It could be because the reward for winning isn't the same as a penalty for losing, but it sounds like it might have potential. Now, Richard, you play backgammon. You're certainly a stronger player than I am. But if you gave me a 10-5 spot each game, probably we could compete evenly. What do you think of the idea in general?
I have in the past heard of that type of spot. No, never anywhere that huge. I heard of people who were playing at, say, 11 to 10, where the weaker player would win 11 and the stronger player win 10. I played a lot where the spot was, two kinds of...
An opening roll, maybe.
Well, yeah, like I used to play against one particularly weak player who liked to gamble a lot. And I started off spotting him in opening 6-1, which is a really good roll. Then it moved up to 3-1, which is probably the best non-doubles roll.
Yes.
And then it moved to double aces as his opening roll, which is kind of ridiculous. But he was one of those players who would do everything in his power to make sure he never ended up winning at the end. So your favorite kind of player if you're trying to make money at backgammon. The other possibility with the kids would be to play a match, say, to 7, and spot them a certain number of points. You know, like
so they
start with
4,
and you start with 0, and you're playing to 7, or something like that.
Uh-huh.
2-1, I don't think I could give you 2-1.
Well, agreed. Now, if it was 10-5, I'd be going, if that were the fair spot, I'd be trying to get 11, and you'd try to only be paying me 8. I mean, that's part of the negotiation system that works out. And if you're trying to gamble to make money, it might not work. But if there's a lot of people who play for the fun of playing, which generally wouldn't include us for the most part. But and that way, to find a way to make it even might be a good idea.
Yeah, and it seems like the whole game of golf seems to be about how you come up with these spots. And the guy who, what they call matching up better, is the guy who ends up with the money, usually.
And as in golf, in back... backgammon, it's like in golf, you expect to get lied to on the first tee. You know, I have a broken back and whatever it is. And then, of course, the guy plays like Tiger Woods. But so that would do in any kind of handicap system. But, oh, well, let's move on. Let's talk
to I just wanted to mention something. The main event of the World Series is going on, and I've gotten a number of emails asking about our guest, Sia Leda, the woman who is going to dress up like a man to play in the main event. I did email her PR rep, and they said the only thing they could point me to was her Twitter account. So she has tweeted a couple of times. She claims to have been playing. I don't know if she's still in, if she was really playing, if it was all a PR stunt. But that's the update. You can search Sia Leda on Twitter and see what she has to say.
Well, if she, if the WSOP was saying they were going to try to figure out who she was, and when they did find it out, kick her out. Now, if that is true, any useful information she gives on tweeting only is going to hasten her exit. So,
yeah, you know, she did post one series of pictures of four people and said that all looked like men, and said, is one of these women playing at your table? Now, three of them had facial hair. So, but one of them actually just looked like someone who was very androgynous. Uh-huh. And there's no way I think they could claim that she was trying to look like a man with that. She looked kind of like a young David Bowie, and if it was her, I kind of think it was not her. So if that was the look she was going with, there's no way they could throw her out for that.
Well, she was. She claimed on the show that she had her boobs were too big for that. So I don't know that that would.
Well, depending on what kind of clothes you wear,
I suppose.
Right, if you're wearing a hoodie and it's very loose and you have the hoodie up,
that gives you smaller boobs. All right, let's move on. We had two separate emails from listeners suggesting that we get Rymo on the air. I'm going to make the rash assumption that those two emails were not from Rymo's mother and brother and were actually on the level. So, Rymo, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks for having me.
Was it your mother?
No,
it wasn't.
Not right. My mother.
Now, you started using the name Rymo when you started posting on various blackjack forums. When did you start posting? Why did you start posting? And what were the general subjects that interested you in posting wise?
I mean, I didn't start posting until after my first year of playing. And I just, I didn't even think to look for an online community for blackjack. But as my bankroll grew and as I got more serious into it, I really wanted to reach out to other people who had more experience than I did to learn from them. And yeah. I mean, I was basically fascinated from trip reports and just the game itself, you know. So
how did you actually get started playing in the first place?
A friend of mine was actually posting like pictures on Facebook, you know, chips and cash. And he was like kind of flaunting it. And I was asking him, you know, are you playing poker again? And he said, no, I'm playing blackjack, counting cards. So that's what got me initially interested. I looked into it once before, but I just didn't take it seriously. So, you know, that's how I adopted the count that I was using. So he was using Zen count. So I just adopted that. And then from there, you know, I just started reading a book or two and started learning. And, but for the first, for the first year, I don't think I was a winning player for about 8 months. From January till middle of October, actually, I lost $50 after 332 hours of play.
Well, it's a difference between being a losing player and being down $50.
No, but you're not sure that you were playing.
No, I was using really small spreads, and I didn't have a lot of information. I wasn't on the forums, for the first year. I didn't have software or anything. So,
what book were you going off? Or did you
the very first one I read was Arnold Snyder's book, and then
Black Belt and Blackjack.
Yeah, and then I think after about 10 months, I knew that I wasn't really going anywhere with it. So I knew I was doing something wrong. So I started to increase my bet spreads, and I just happened to go on like a pretty good run after that. And so like I think in the last two and a half months of the year, I ended up winning like $15,000. And then the month after that, I won like another 15 or so. I started with like 3,000. And so when my bankroll got like over 30, that's when I started taking it more serious. So I started purchasing more books. And then that's how I got on the forums and I bought the software and, you know.
So do you think that the forums definitely helped you ramp up to kind of the next level of
Yeah, absolutely.
Competence.
Yeah, well, because, you know, when you're by yourself and you have no information, it's just very difficult to really exactly know how to approach the game, you know?
So. Yes.
Yeah, and what about your friend, though, that had been posting on Facebook? I mean, didn't
he's
ask
a,
him? Like,
he was
hey.
A, no, he, it turned out he was, like, a really big ploppy.
Oh.
he was really proficient at keeping, like, the count. I remember we used to sit at the table together, and we could both keep, like, a really accurate running count. We used to trade off the count with each other, but he just never really took it to the next step. He just would, like, place side bets. He would sometimes bet into negative counts. He just never really took it to the next level. So, yeah.
Now, you're married with kids. And so that first year where you made $15,000, that's not enough to support a family on. Did you have a... How did this work out? Did you inherit lots of money or what?
No. So my first 2.5 years or so was recreational. I owned some businesses, retail businesses and a service business. So I had like a pretty flexible schedule. I was just playing whenever I had the opportunity to. And so I didn't start playing full time until 2.5 years into my career. So
And what did your wife think of all this?
She was actually, you know, pretty supportive. I did have money that I could have maybe started a bankroll with, because we had, you know, pretty large savings. Our business was successful, for the quite, you know, like the first 7 years. And, but I don't think I would have been able to convince her to, hey babe, can I take $30,000 or $40,000 out of our savings to play blackjack? I think she probably would have killed me. So I started with, a lower amount. I started with a few thousand dollars. And I think as I started winning, you know, I'm working off of, you know, what she considered to be house money or something, you know. So now I'm playing with the casino's money, or at least that's the way she saw it. So she never, it never bothered her then, you know.
Do your kids think you're like Superman to do this, or is this just...
They're young, so...
They have no idea. This
no.
is just what daddies do.
Yeah.
My kids thought it was boring. I mean, yeah, they don't. They liked, you know, when they were little... The MGM used to have a theme park behind it.
Yes.
So, you know, they liked going and staying at the MGM and going to the theme park and things like that. But the actual playing of blackjack was kind of...
Well, they're right. It is boring.
Yeah, yes.
All right. Now, we regularly have Bob Nersessian on the show. He's defended players who've been backroomed forcibly. Have you ever been backroomed like this? And did you get an attorney involved?
Yeah. So... around 2016, I was starting to become more active and more known, like in the databases and stuff. And I was getting flyered a lot. And I had one casino that I went to, and I'd been backed off there before. I went back like 7 months later, and I just walk in and...
You'd been backed off for 86.
So, yeah, I was backed off, and I was actually walked out by security. At the time, you know, I was new in my career. I didn't see that as like a formal trespass. I thought that I had to maybe be read, you know, a trespass statute or sign papers.
Yeah. Well, not sign papers, but if they didn't read you the Trespass Act, then...
I was told a little differently, but I... So they just asked me to leave and not return. And so I came back 7 months later. And when I came back, I didn't even play. I walked in... And I looked completely different. I was standing around. I was debating on playing. I had chips that I'd been holding onto for close to a year. And I was like, man, I need to either play with these or cash them or do something. I can't just keep holding onto these chips. And so I'm walking around the casino. I saw some pit bosses I had issues with in the past. So I decided not to play. I was getting ready to walk out. And that's when I get a tap on the shoulder. And it's a gaming agent. He's in a suit. He says, yeah, I need your ID. And I said, no, why do you need my ID? He goes, just, I need your ID. I need to see it. I said, I'm not giving you my ID. He says, well, I'm a cop. And so, because in this state, gaming is state police. So I said, well, let me see your credentials. So he shows me his badge. I said, well, what do you need my ID for? He says, we just need it. So and you show it to me. And I just wouldn't give it up. Then security guard comes in and he intervenes and he says, yeah, you need to come to the back with us. I said, I'm not going to the pack with you. And he says, no, you are, you don't understand. You got to come back. I said, and I asked the cop, I said, am I being arrested? Am I being detained? And if so, what's the charge? He wouldn't answer me. So I had to repeat myself two or three times like this. And I said, am I being arrested or not? And he finally looks at the security guard. He says, is he being arrested? And he goes, well, if he doesn't come to the back with us, he is.
Wait, the cop asks the security?
Yeah.
That's a good source of information.
Yeah, right.
So, I said to him, I said, listen, I don't think you understand. You see that door out there? I'm walking out that door. I want to leave. I don't want to be here. I'm gone. And I kept trying to move towards the exit, and they just kept blocking me. And they kept blocking me. And I had no AP contacts at this time except for Card Counter Mike. You guys had him on the show a long time ago, a couple years ago, a few years ago. But anyway.
Under that name?
Yeah, under that name. Well, so anyway, I had just met him.
It was really Arnold Snyder, but he was using Card Player Mike.
So I had just
Diamond Mike.
I had just met him and one other AP for the first time. They were my only two contacts at this point the night before. And we had just met up for dinner earlier that evening. And so I call him and I'm like, Mike, I'm like, what is going on? I was like, they're trying to backroom me over here. What should I do? Should I call someone? It's 2:30 in the morning. I can't call Bob Nersesi. And I don't know what to do at this point. And then his only recollection of the whole situation was he just remembers me being on the phone. And then all he hears is, hey, get off me. Get stop. Don't touch me. And then so I had to hang up the phone. They actually grabbed my arms and just put them behind my back. And at that point, they forcefully just pushed me where they wanted me to go. And so I ended up in the back room, and finally when I got back there, they said, okay, look, man, just cooperate with us and we can just get this over with. So after fighting with them what seemed like an eternity, I finally just gave them ID, photocopied it. Security guard comes over and he throws like this big blown up photo of my face. He goes, see, this is him when he looks like when he wears a hat and he does, you know, he has a beard and blah, blah, blah. I changed up my appearance. The way they got me was just because through the security checkpoint with the ID scan. Cause there's no way they should have recognized me, but, and then, so they made me sign these papers. Hey, you'll never come back. If you do, you know, you'll be prosecuted. And, another security guard came back there. He's taking photos of me. And so I was just ready to get out of there because it's like 2:30 in the morning. I'm in like a really bad neighborhood. I've got maybe like low five figures on me. I don't want to go to jail at this point. So I finally just signed everything. And I was like, well, listen, if you're going to not let me back, I need to cash these chips. And that was a big ordeal because I didn't want to give them the chips. I wanted them to escort me to the cage and they refused to do that. And so we kind of went back and forth. And finally, they just made me put it on the security desk, surveillance verified it. And when they walked me out of the room, eventually the security guard went in, cashed it out for me. And then they escorted me off the premises and that was it. So, but it was scary though.
Yeah, I'm sure. Did you call a lawyer?
I did. I spoke with Bob Nersesian briefly and Bob Loeb. And the only issue was that in the past they had asked me to leave and not return. They never actually said if you come back, we'll have you arrested. They never made me sign anything. They didn't read any kind of trespass statute. But Bob Loeb sounded a little bit more, you know, a little bit more optimistic than maybe Nersesian did. I think he was like, we could maybe get a settlement. We could. But with the amount of time involved, you didn't spend a whole lot of time in the back room. It's not like I was there for hours. So the cost that would be involved and, you know, you would be well known, it just might not be worth it. So I just kind of dropped it then.
Yeah. I mean, that whole you would be well known idea is something people should not worry about at all in the least. I mean, James Grosjean plays 325 days a year, if not more, and he's about as well known as you could possibly get by every database, every gaming commission.
Right.
You know, so yeah. And Tommy Hylands, too. I mean, he's been playing for 40 years. Everybody knows who he is. He still plays. He said he can still play more hours than he cares to play. So,
all right. And so Bob Loeb is based in Chicago and Nersessian is based in Las Vegas. I assume it was somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
All right. That narrows it down. At least it wasn't in Florida. Okay, good.
And it wasn't an Indian casino. That's
right.
The other. If it was an Indian casino, you're just screwed.
Yeah.
You sent notes to us on an incident that sounded like one of my senior moments. Now, today you're considerably younger than me, but with any luck, your day will come. You were 86 from a casino, and you couldn't find your car. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I was on a trip, a 4-5-6-day trip, and I went out to this casino. I was also new into my career at this time. I was still playing recreationally. I think I may have played rated. I got a little bit of time in the night before. The next morning, I went back, played for an hour. I went up to go to use the restroom, and standing behind me is security and the shift manager or casino manager, someone. And they pulled me off to the side. They give me the spiel, you know, hey, we're a private business. We have the right to refuse anyone's business, and we're going to exercise that right now. You're being banned from the property permanently. We don't want you back here. You need to cash out and leave. So no big deal. I end up cashing out. I start to leave. And I was talking to my wife on my phone. And I was like, yeah, I just got 86 from this property. I'm going to start heading back towards home. I was going to hit another city on the way home and stay the night there. And so I'm talking to her, and I can't find my car. And so I'm looking.
Is it your car or a rental car?
No, it was my car. I look on the third level, and I can't find it. And I go on the fourth level, can't find it. So I go down to the second level, can't find it. And I start like looking around to look at to see what the scenery looked like, because I remember what I saw on my way in. And I'm telling my wife, babe, I'm kind of worried. I just got 86 here. I can't find my vehicle. Let me let you go and so I can figure this out. So she gets on my Find My app, or Find My iPhone app. And she sends me a screenshot where it shows that my location is at the casino, but it shows that my iPad, which is in the trunk of my car, is like across the river a few miles away up in another state, basically, because we're on the border. Okay.
Wow.
And so I immediately freak out because all my stuff is in there. I have like half of my trip roll in there at the time, which wasn't much. I think I had $12,000 or $13,000 in there. And all my clothes, my belongings, my iPad, because my iPad has like its own, you know, internet service. It has this SIM card in it. So I immediately just start freaking out because I'm like, why is my iPad in a different location than I am? So I'm, you know, I go into the casino. I'm like, man, maybe this is a trap. Maybe they're trying to, you know, find a reason to arrest me. I, you know, I'm really naive at this point. I'm new. So like all these weird thoughts are going through my head. And I say, hey, do you know anything about my car? Did it get towed? I thought maybe they towed my vehicle just to kind of mess with me. I don't know what happened. And so they said, no, if it would have been towed, we would have known something. So I call the police. And I'm in the parking garage. They come out, and I keep refreshing the page to show where my car is, and I'm taking screenshots of it just in case like the signal drops off or something. And I'm showing the police. I'm like, listen, my car was here, and you know. So they start sending out like a patrol vehicle to go to the location where the signal's coming from my iPad, and they can't find anything. And then, you know, I need to use the restroom really bad at this point. And I'm, you know, it's awkward because I just got 86 there. And I had to have security escort me back inside so I can use the restroom. And I'm with the police probably for 20, 25 minutes or something. It felt really long. And eventually, the security guard says, well, let me run the tapes and let me see what I can find. I said, okay. He comes back about 10, 15 minutes later and he says, hey, were you driving such and such vehicle? He describes like the color, the make, and the model. And I said, yeah, that's it. He goes, I think your car is still here in the parking lot. I said, what? And I think no more than 100 feet from where we were standing the whole time by the patrol car, my car is right there. I'm like, oh my God. Man. So I go over to the car. I said, well, maybe maybe somebody stole something out of my car. Maybe they took my bag. Maybe that's why the signal, because I keep refreshing the signal and it still shows that my iPad is across the river bordering this other, you know, on this other state. And I'm like, I go into the trunk and there's my bag. I go in my bag, there's my bankroll, and I go in and there's my iPad. And I look at the cop and I'm like, I am so sorry. And he was just like, I'm glad we got it worked out. But you could just tell by the look on his face, he hated me. And this is the one time technology really failed me. I don't know why it showed the signal was in a complete, like, few miles away. And so the only thing I could think of was that maybe when I was driving in, the signal pinged off of one of the towers or something, and it just kind of stayed like that. But it was a really embarrassing back off and a memorable one for myself and them. So,
yeah. Yeah. It'd be a long time before you could go back to that place, I'm sure.
Yeah. They have a pretty good fixation about who you are.
Yeah.
I did actually go back again. Like a year later.
Some guys are not quick learners.
Like I said, I was new. I was still, pretty green at the time. They did was re-86 me again. And they were like, hey, do you remember back on this date and this time you were asked by this shift manager to leave and not return? And I was like, I don't recall. And he said, well, because it's been so long, we're going to just remind you again. But, you know, if you do come back, you will be arrested next time. And so, and that was the end of that. But
so I, my partner, Daryl, one time lost three cars in the period of 2 weeks in Atlantic City. He is much more responsible these days. I'll just say that for him, because he only
loses two in 3 weeks.
I was 22 years old or whatever. But yeah, in Atlantic City, he lost three cars. The only story I remember was it was winter and very cold, and he pulled up to resorts, and he just pulled up in front, left the car running, and he was just going to run inside to check a particular game and then run back out. And he ran inside, and there was a particular dealer on that he wanted to play. And he sat down and just started playing. And 6 hours later, he couldn't remember where his car was. And apparently the, valet or something had just gone and parked his car. But he had no idea. I think he ended up calling the police. But but yeah, he lost three in a two-week period. So you're not the only one.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, so that is a... you're on the way to making the Blackjack Hall of Fame. I mean, clearly, this is what it takes. All right, we're talking to Raimo. We're going to take a brief break for some commercials, and then we'll be back. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In July, Chevron and Walmart cards may be earned at 8,334 points, which is a 0.6 rate, which is twice the normal rate. Limit of 10 for the month. So for the first $83,000 coin in, you play for the month, you're getting double points, which is 0.6 at that casino, six times points at others. Since 83,000 is more than many players play, effectively double points all month. The third class in the free video poker series will be Tuesday, July 17th at noon in the Silverado Lounge. The class is Super Double Bonus. This game is like Double Bonus, except that four jacks, queens, and kings pay 600 coins instead of 250. The other pay schedule categories are reduced accordingly. The 9-5 version we teach returns 99.695% with appropriate play, making it basically an even game 24/7 with the 0.30 slot club, plus mailers and promotion make it slightly positive. This month's promotion gives you a 0.3% advantage. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on many of the games. The game of the week is Ultimate X Wheel Poker, which is the latest offering in the Ultimate X franchise. In this game, you bet 10 coins per line and are awarded bonuses on this hand to be play off on the next hand, which is a feature in all Ultimate X games. The difference is that instead of getting 12x being the multiplier you earn for a full house, as you do in regular Ultimate X, you spin a wheel. On the wheel are amounts of coins, 250, 500, 1,000, or 2,000, and several slots giving you big multipliers on the next hand, between 14x and 20x. As in regular Ultimate X, induces wild variation, it's the straight flush that triggers the big bonus rather than the full house. All right, we're back talking to Raimo. What is the Discord channel?
Discord is a text and voice chat application, and it can be used through PC, Mac, smartphone, tablet. I think it was originally designed for the gaming community, but it's a pretty cool social platform that could be used by anyone. So it's just like an ongoing chat room, and the cool features that they have is you have the ability to do like a voice chat through like a voice over IP type service, you know, so you can have as many people, you know, in the chat room that all want to hop into a voice conversation, which is pretty cool. And you can send people private messages. So it's not like a forum, you know, it's, you know, what makes it different is it's just an ongoing chat. So,
and the chats can have many different channels.
Mm-hmm.
So if people want to talk about, say, video poker, there'd be a separate channel for that. And somebody else wants to talk about blackjack, they can have a separate channel for that. But yeah, it started with gaming. So like if you play Overwatch or something like that, you know, you can talk with your teammates while you're playing the game.
That kind of gaming.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Yeah, not casino gaming.
No.
Although that would be cool to see guys at blackjack tables wearing headsets, you know.
And talking out loud. Yeah. You can sure read the whole cards on this table. Come on by. Particular channel on the Discord channel on Blackjack, is this one that you've set up for the Black? Is set up by somebody else? How do people get on it?
Yeah, so I was a part of a couple other channels that were designed for the purpose of AP discussion, but the information on those channels were just terrible. So I decided to start my own channel, and I've created a bunch of other little sub channels. So if you want to talk about blackjack, you know, a lot of people will discuss that in like the general chat room. Or if you want to talk about video poker, there's a video poker chat. If you want to talk about sports, there's a sports chat. And I put like a lot of resources there for newer players, because a lot of the guys that were originally joining were new players to the community. So I put a bunch of free resources that would just kind of point them in the right direction. So, you know, hey, if you want to read books, these are a list of good books to read. Or if you want to join a forum, these are the list of forums that I've participated in. Or if you're looking for software to run simulations, these are the good softwares to go out and purchase. So I would just kind of point people in the right direction. There's a lot of people on there that just kind of chat, you know, about various different types of AP. It started off with blackjack, but now it's kind of developed into something more. But if people want to get on, though, I did set up like a site, because it was like an invite only link, and it was pretty tough to kind of get people on there. You have to send people private messages with links to get onto the channel. So I got like a domain name. I got like a little free site. It's called blackjackdiscord.com. All they have to do is just go on there, and there's a link that'll just take them straight into the channel if they want to participate.
So one of the concerns that players have, I mean, this has kind of gone on for 20 years or something now, where originally Wong and Arnold Snyder had websites where they had chat rooms. And these are actually really beneficial to players sometimes. You're right. There's a lot of sort of just nonsense talk on there. But occasionally there's really good information, especially for newer players trying to learn something. But the big concern was always, you know, in the early days, the Griffin agent would get on there, or, you know, surveillance people would get on there. I mean, this always ends up happening because it's hard to keep these things secure. So How do you deal with that? And how many people are on there? How many subscribers or whatever do you have?
I've seen, like, we have like a few hundred people on there that are registered to that channel. Not a lot of them are all active though. As far as privacy, I tell everyone to just treat it like you would any other open AP forum. I say, don't use your real name. Don't discuss specific locations. Don't use any real emails. Just be smart about it, you know? And then we've also set like private chats. There's ways, you know, within the channel that you can set private chat areas to where if we've gotten to know someone over the course of the last year or two, or if we've been corresponding with them through the forums, like through Blackjack the Forum or BJ21, Blackjack Apprenticeship, whatever. If I know them, then it's possible to have more private conversations as well. So there's no need to worry about any surveillance or anyone lurking in there. So, but just treat it like an open forum though. So,
I want to go back to, something we touched on earlier, which is family life. How much are you on the road and how is that going with your family?
You know, it's always been, my wife has been pretty supportive throughout this whole thing. I will typically get 500 hours in a year of play, and I just try to keep the trips like maybe 3 to 5 days. Sometimes I'll go as long as like a week, but she's pretty understanding. She's never really, been fixated on the results too much. I remember the trip where I was 86 and lost the car. I was driving home and I started that trip off really well. And I think on my last day or two, I dumped like 10 grand or something. And it put me in the hole a little bit. And at the time I was really new to playing. So, I mean, that was a big swing for me at that time. And I just remember I was just kind of, you know, bitching and moaning to my wife. I was like, man, you know, I started off really well. And you know, I just had a really bad swing the last couple of days. And then she says to me, well, at least you got that EV, right?
Wow.
And I was like, yeah, I guess you're right. So, and she goes, that's what you wanted, right? You wanted to get EV. And I said, yeah, I did. And I got a bunch of hours in on that trip. I said, yeah. So
that's great. But yeah. I mean, for me, it was always, it might have been harder on me just because I didn't want to be gone because of my kids. I didn't want to miss their soccer games, you know, all that kind of stuff.
So yeah.
How many trips per month would you say you make?
It depends on if it's somewhere that I can go close by within 4 or 5 hours. You know, I might make a few of those. If I'm traveling further out, I'll make it a longer trip. So I'll take less of those. I mean, it just varies. I mean, like, this year I had, one trip where I've had like months where I've maybe only done like 25 hours, but then, you know, last month I did, you know, close to 100 hours. So it varies. It's just whenever it's convenient. And I just try to keep a certain pace and just keep up with it. So, but yeah, it is hard though, being away from the wife and kids. So, I mean, eventually I want to transition, you know, out of full-time play, because yeah, it is difficult being away all the time. I definitely think, you know, it can put some strain on a relationship and, you know, you miss out on things with your children. So, it's definitely a little bit harder like that. So,
and I'm not trying to ask what you earn, but if you play 500 hours a year, you kind of have to have at least $200 an hour EV to have to make a reasonable income, and you're able to find that you're still able to generate that kind of EV just counting cards.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the games that I was playing this year, last year, was generating 200 to 300 an hour. Some games, I mean, if it's a really good game, you know, $400 or $500 an hour. So it just depends, you know, if you're finding like a really good double deck game, you know, high tolerance and decent cuts. I mean, you know, you can easily make $500 an hour or more.
Yeah, those games still exist.
I mean, and you know what? It's funny because there's just places out in the middle of nowhere that you would just never expect to take the action. It's the places that you the least expect sometimes.
I agree. The big places that get tons of action, like, you know, the Wynn or the Venetian, yeah, you're going to get nothing. But yeah, it's some place in the middle of nowhere that...
There have been times where I sat down and I'm just thinking, I'll be lucky if I get 45 minutes here. And then all of a sudden, it's like 10 hours later and, you know, I'm up like five figures and I'm like, how am I still here? And, it, you know, so it's super aggressive and everything. But I don't know. Some places just don't know how to do the evaluation, or maybe if they see that you're betting a little bit larger, they don't want to back you off as quickly. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it does seem that the more you bet, the less heat you get.
Yeah.
But is that your approach? Like the no cover, put it in their face, just spread until they throw you out?
Pretty much. I've always been pretty aggressive in terms of like bet spreads. And then as time went on, I even, you know, would just get more aggressive. I split tens and, you know, I would just maybe, you know, if I was on like a $500 max game, I might be betting $10 a hand and then go to two hands a table max or something. I just, you know,
put it in their face.
Yeah, just that's all, you know, that's always been kind of my approach. Surprisingly, sometimes they'll let you do that for quite a while, and sometimes it doesn't last more than a few minutes, but you know, it's just how it is.
So you don't know until you know.
Exactly.
Now, you must have been backed off hundreds of times.
Yeah.
Now, other than the incidents you've already talked about today, have there been any interesting backoffs?
Yeah, I mean, most of them have always been pretty polite. They're usually very just cordial, like, hey, no more action. And then you just walk out. I've had a couple nasty ones. I would say, I think I've had maybe 130, 140 plus backoffs or something, but, maybe a handful of 86s. I remember I had one in town here that was pretty nasty. I remember I was in the middle of playing and I was in the middle of a hand, and they, you know, I got surrounded by security and they wouldn't let me finish the round. And I actually had like a blackjack on one hand, and so I had a winning hand, and they refused to finish the round.
Wow, did you call gaming?
So I threatened to call gaming. The problem was I was playing on an alias. So I was, you know, worried that they might try to, you know, gaming might get my real name. And then because I was playing on a completely different name. And so they refused to pay it out. And they said, not only, you know, you're not going to cash these chips unless you show us ID, but you forfeit the chips that are on the table. And so I said, are you kidding me? I said, just finish the round. Let's just, you know, let me get out of here. And they refused. So I made the mistake. I just grabbed the chips off the table.
Hey.
Yeah, I did, you know, heat of the moment. And he's like, you know, you're going to get arrested. And so he was like shoving his shoulder into me, trying to maybe provoke me. And they're just extremely aggressive. And I think I called Bob about it just because I was more concerned about myself to, you know, could I get in trouble for grabbing the chips, despite the fact that it was a winning hand and they should have completed the round. They didn't. So,
well, it was a winning hand on one of them.
On one of them, yeah.
You had multiple spots.
Yeah. So, yeah, funny thing was Bob called me back and he called me when I was sleeping. It was like in the day, and I picked up the phone and I don't remember the call at all. My friend had to wake me up. He's like, you know, you're on the phone, right? And Bob sounded really confused and maybe a little upset because I didn't make any sense when I was talking. I was still like asleep, but yeah, I wasn't looking to get like any kind of like settlement or anything. I was curious, you know, did I do something wrong here? And, you know, what could the consequences be? So I haven't played any of their properties in this area since that incident, but yeah, I got chased out and
multiple properties. Sounds like Stations or Harrah's
or MGM or, yeah, or Boyd or, yeah. I mean, there's lots of
there are. So did he say you had any
there's
liability?
Nothing wrong with playing under a different name, right, as long as you didn't have a fake ID,
right?
So
yeah, I think I was staying at a sister property really close by. And so my main concern, and I was in a comped room, but I was not playing at that property. And my main concern was if they get my real name, they might realize that I'm staying next door. And then, you know, you get evicted. So, and then they might deactivate my card. And so it just wasn't worth it. You know, I mean, I didn't want to take it.
So what is your approach to using a player's card or playing anonymous?
Now I don't use player's cards. Every once in a while, if there's a property that I know, and like through networking where they say, listen, it doesn't matter if you're in OSN or Biometrica, you could play here, no issues. But aside from that, I don't even chance it most of the time. Because it just causes problems. I mean, every time, you know, you try so hard to... The CTRing is like the big issue, you know? And so every time I've ever CTR'd, the moment you give up your information, 30 minutes later, you're getting backed off. And so, yeah, I used to play rated a lot in the beginning, which is what landed me in, you know, all the databases and everything. But now it's just, I just don't think it's worth it. So don't stay at the property. And
yeah. Lesson learned.
Right.
What about long losing streaks? Those are always a lot of fun. Have you been through that?
Yeah. Last year, I had one that was 300 hours.
Wow. That's a bad one.
Yeah. Let me see. So.
And you're only playing 50 hours a month.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
That's 6 months, 7 months?
No, this one lasted. It started like second week of March, and I didn't fully climb out of it until I think first week of November or something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But your wife was proud of the EV you got, so everything was fine.
Right.
Well, hey, when you added it up at the end of the year, he was still ahead. So.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it still actually turned out to be a pretty good year. I had a really huge upswing at the very end of the year, but I was 150, from top to bottom, 150 hours into it, 150.49. It looks like I'd lost $44,759. And then it took me almost another 150 to get it all back. So that was really frustrating. You know, just you felt like you're just spinning your wheels, you know, nonstop.
Well, we had Yoshi on the show, and he once lost for 4 hours. So he's had it rough, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hate it when that happens.
Yeah. So, and then this year, I'm in the middle of another big one now, and it's really annoying. I'm down a little bit more, and I'm 150 hours into it. So I'll be surprised if it, you know, if this lasts any less than 300 or so hours. So
brutal.
Now, gambling full time or quarter time, if 500 hours is quarter time, whatever it is, what kind of highs and lows emotionally do you find this happens?
So yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of I'll talk about a recent trip, I guess, because the reality is a lot of the new people that are on my Discord, they all just think, okay, let me get a bankroll, let me start playing, and problem solved, you know, and that's it. And there's so many other obstacles that people don't think about. There's, you know, obviously great trips, and then you have I had a recent trip where I was on the road. It was supposed to be like 2 days long, and it turns out to be a week long trip. I end up driving 5 hours, 6 hours away from home, and I play for 1 day, did well. Then the next day I end up CTRing, and then I was told that I'd be flyer throughout the whole state and parts of another state. I said, okay, so now I drive to another state. So now I have to get back on the road another 2.5 hours, and I'm in another place, and every day I'm dumping like 10,000 one day and then 12,000 the next day. And it's just like, it doesn't seem to end. And, I ended up, you know, at one point I ran out of cash, but I had like another $25,000 in chips. But the dilemma that I was in, I had $10,000 in chips from one casino in 3 hours in one direction. And I had like another $7,000 in chips in casino that was 2.5 hours north of me. And then I had another like $8,000 in chips at a casino that was two hours south of me. And so the nearest bank is, for my branch, is 170 miles away from what I understand. And so I had like maybe close to 30K with me, and I'm close to tapped out, and I have all these chips, but I have to go in all these separate directions. So I'm like, what am I going to do here? So I'm calling my bank, trying to figure out, okay, how much, what's the most I can take out of an ATM, or, you know, what? And so I found out that I can go to the cage and I can purchase up to $7,500 for like a 2% fee. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to pay, I think it had to be like $7,300 and then plus the cost of the fee. And I'm thinking, okay, I can either pay the $150 for this fee, or I have to get back on the road for another 3 hours. So what's going to cost me more in time and gas and everything? So I have to do this like twice over the course of the next 2 days while I'm taking money out of an ATM. As a matter of fact, I was in the middle of a hand. I'm in the middle of a shoe, and I had not run out of cash at that point, but I was starting to get close, and I was in max bet situation. So I was like, you know what? I know how this can turn out. I had to stop the table, and luckily I was the only one there, but I threw cash on the table. They laid it out, and they're just, the whole game is stopped. I had to run to the cage. I'm calling my bank. I'm on the hold with them for 15 minutes while I'm trying to keep, you know, track of the count in my head the whole time and just make sure I don't drop the count while I'm, you know, on hold for 15 minutes. Finally, they approved it because it was a fraud alert. They're like, yeah, we saw that you tried taking $6,000 out of your account. I was like, actually, what's my limit? They're like, $7,500. Okay, I need all that. And I actually, when I finally got it, I ended up needing it all because I ended up losing all the rest of the cash that I had. And I ended up making a comeback after that. But, you know,
casino must have loved it. You look like the biggest degenerate in the world.
I did. Yeah. And then finally, I ended up leaving this place because I had to start making my way home. But I had to drive north and turn around. I had to go cash out these chips in another area. And you know, I played till like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. The casino closed. The table games closed for a few hours. It wasn't convenient. I had to sleep in my car for a few hours and then start driving. And now I'm like 9 or 10 hours away from home. So I have to, as I'm driving back, I hit up another casino, and then they ended up backing me off, and I lose a bunch there. So it was just like almost everything, you know, it's like Murphy's Law, right? If it can go wrong, it will go wrong.
It sounds like the glitter and glamour of the life of a professional gambler.
Yeah, I remember not quite the same incident, but I was playing at the Reserve, which is where Fiesta Henderson is now. And the game they had was a very good $2 five-play game, which is $50 a hand. And it was Super Double Bonus, which is a pretty high volatile game, but it was significantly positive EV. And I had run out of cash on hand. Now, I lived 5 miles away at the time or something, and there were funds at the house, but I'd going 5 miles away and getting it back was more than I wanted to do at that time. So the Reserve did not allow you to have markers. But they went up, and since I was a known player, they would let me borrow $200 if I wanted to. And I go, $200? I'm playing $50 a hand. I've lost $12,000 in the past hour and a half. I need more than $200. And they go, $200 is our limit. That's gone. Thank you very much. So I cashed out, and I had more money at home, but after I got home, it was like, screw it. Didn't want to go back. But
you know, that's where having a network is so important, right? If you have friends who I would think by now you must know people in all those states and be able to call them and say, hey, you know, do you have any cash?
But for me, I had money 5 miles away. It was not as though I needed to call you up. You were not an active part of my life at that point, and say, you know, can I borrow some?
I didn't know anyone in that area at the time. Well, I still don't know anyone in that particular. It's kind of out in the middle of nowhere. So I just, that's how it goes, though, you know.
All right. This is an enjoyable episode. We've been talking to Raimo. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. You still don't want that 10 to 5 spot, huh?
No, yeah. I'll pass on that.
In that case, I'm going to wish everybody lots of royal flushes next week. Good day.